yourself for an in-depth look at all your favorite villains, one villain at a time. It is the Rogues Gallery with the man down under himself, Damian Smith. Here now, the Rogues Gallery.
Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to the third installment of the Rogues Gallery. Yeah, I know we've sort of been on a quarterly Batman and Robin All-Star schedule as of late with this, but finally, we are indeed recording an episode here, and I am joined by the head of the Rogues Gallery himself, and he is the soon-to-be-published co-podcaster of Cryptographic. He is Damian Smith, Lord Shaper on the forums. What's up, Damian?
How you going, guys? Oh, I can't wait till Lobo hears that one. We're taunting about it in the Cryptographic forum with me changing my name to be the published Lord Shaper.
Oh. And I'm sure somewhere Raph is hitting his head against the wall, so...
The way it came about was just hilarious because I wrote up the actual story just as I saw the pictures and something came to me. And then I got an email from Ed Lavelli from Revere saying, can we use that? I was like, yeah.
It's like, great, sure. I mean, do you want me to pay you? But great to have you back on, Damian. It's been a while and good to have the Rogues Gallery back, buddy.
Yeah, we've been wanting to do it, but... Yeah, just everything keeps happening, and
yeah. Well, hey, I mean, you got a show now, so I mean, I know that you're a busy man with that also, and I have a show that takes forever to edit, so I kind of know exactly what's going on with that and the long nights. I think we both know how that is. But nevertheless, we got a good episode planned today. A little bit of a less mainstream villain going, and we're back to DC. As you know, last time was Dr. Doom. If you haven't listened to that, head on back to the archives and listen to it, as that was a really good episode. But this time we're focusing upon The Shade out of DC Comics.
First up, I actually was introduced to him from the Starman series back in the 90s, done by James Robinson. So that was my first sort of view of him, and he's just one of my favorite characters ever since.
Yeah,
I've actually got the... JLU Shade sitting right next to me actually at the moment.
Nice.
Which I had to pay $20 off eBay for because they haven't came out here in Australia.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I think I'm going to be spending about that much money to get a imported Snow Patrol CD in a couple of days, so I feel your pain. But yeah, no, The Shade has been one of those, I guess he's sort of on the line between hero and villain sometimes. But I guess in that way, he's sort of similar to our first Rogues Gallery individual in that aspect, because sometimes he does stuff that you could say are probably morally correct, and other times not so much.
There's two sides to The Shade. Okay, well, first up, the name he's known by is Richard Swift. His first appearance was in Flash Comics number 33, and just to go through his powers, he's got the ability to control darkness, to travel great distances in a short amount of time, also to create shadows into usable tools. He doesn't age, and he's virtually immortal. So, well, as far as anyone knows, he's basically immortal now.
And he does not do Windows.
Now, most of my reference that I actually got from The Shade for his backstory was actually through the miniseries, which unfortunately they haven't traded anywhere yet, mm-hmm. Which came out, I'm just looking at it now, it's dated April 97. So they did a four-part miniseries there showing his first exposure to the Ludlow family, which basically became nemesis of his throughout time, where he was picked up by and cared for by a family, which became the Ludlow family, when he was found wandering the streets without any memory of anything. And it turned out that they were basically going to be using him to set up as a stooge for a robbery that they were doing. You can't go wrong with that, doing something like that. But he sort of realized... He came to terms with who he actually was and regained a bit of his memory and slaughtered the family themselves. But unfortunately, two of the younger children actually survived to then bring a hatred on to continue on to kill him. And they were passing it down through their families. So all the girls were actually having children to then instill in them the hate of the Shade. And then, you know, and it went on and on and on over the centuries.
Now did any of these have powers, or were these just people who were against it?
These were just people. They were just humans. So none of them really understood what he was, but the fact that he was still there and they were just basically bred to hunt him down.
Gotcha.
Yeah, which, it's a really good... If you can find the copies of it, I'm sure that they'll be up somewhere on eBay or something like that. I'd grab it to have a look at it. Now, just for some basic history on him, he was actually created in 1940s to fight against two generations of heroes with the Golden Silver Age Flashes. He also played a role in the first meeting of the Golden Silver Age Flashes, so it's the first time they actually met each other.
Huh. So was he the actual villain in that film?
Yeah, he was the villain back then. As it goes through, a lot of the times, and I think it actually even came up in Justice League, that he was actually a villain just because he was bored.
Okay.
That's what it seems to have been. He did everything. It was just to see if he could get away with it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then he enjoyed running around with the Flash. And, you know, he was a good sparring partner, basically. And so he would do that. And I think, actually, in that Shade series, he actually goes and visits... Was it Jay Garrick? I'm pretty sure he goes and visits Jay at Garrick to actually let him know some wrongdoing that's going on around and could he do something about it.
So he's just kind of like, I'm not in the mood to cause you trouble. Do you mind dealing with these guys? They're sort of bothering me.
Yeah, which Jay didn't actually know that he had any clue where he'd lived or anything like that. So it was a big shock to him.
Yeah.
And in, as I said, in the 1990s, actually, James Robinson launched the Starman series and revitalized the Shade, since he actually resided in Opal City. And that's where Starman was set, which... If you haven't read that series, you have to read that series.
Yes.
And if anyone from DC is listening, we want an absolute. I'm serious. Make me one. I'll be right.
Well, the one thing that I'm a bit annoyed about is the fact that, you know, they had originally said that Jack Knight was going to show up in 52, but he hasn't yet. So I guess maybe they dropped that idea, because I thought perhaps we'd see some more Jack Knight in the future. I guess we're not really going to.
I'd love to see some more Jack Knight, but I thought part of the problem with that was it was actually owned by James Robinson, Jack's character.
Okay.
And so he had to actually license it out.
I gotcha. Okay.
So if that's true or not, that's another thing.
Well, at the same time, he's still writing for DC, so I would assume it would be pretty easy for them to do that.
Yeah, he just gets the royalties off using the character.
Exactly, yeah.
And as they were using the Shade in Starman, they basically revitalized his role as a man of mystery type thing. So he sort of fit in with, say, the Phantom Stranger, that sort of crowd then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where his powers were described as a man who was connected to the Shadowlands, which is a dimension of primordial quasi-sentinel darkness which he can channel for various effects. Part of the history with him is basically he'd made his hometown Opal City back when it was, you know, in the western days, so when it was a dirt track with a couple of wood houses type thing.
Yeah.
And that had always been where he was. He wanted nothing bad to go wrong there. That was his sanctuary. So he would go off and he would fight the Flash and he would do all these other things all around the place, but he would never do anything in his own city. And yeah, he would actually play the hero there, and back in the day he actually befriended Opal City's sheriff, who was Brian Savage, who, if any people actually remember him, he was actually a DC Western hero called Scalp Hunter.
Wow.
And, yeah, all this time he amassed his personal fortune and sort of lived there quite contently.
So I guess Opal is sort of his fortress of solitude, as it were?
Yeah, that's the way I've always taken it. You know, that's why you see him actually throughout the Starman series when he's actually going up to Jack for help, which I know that Ted didn't really like. He was actually handing him his journals, and that's why if you get the individual issues, they had the actual Shade's journal in the back of each one.
Ah, okay.
Which would actually tell you bits and pieces of what went on in the city at the time.
That's pretty cool.
Which, yeah, and it became a story in its own. Like, even in the miniseries, they actually did the same sort of thing in the back of each one, but it was a separate story. It was like a fifth story about the Ludlows as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he actually never wanted to actually face off against Ted Knight because of the link to Opal City.
Mm-hmm.
And he would actually interrupt his career as a supervillain to help allies in England.
Alongside Captain X. Captain X. Which, of course, stands for Captain Extreme.
Unknown to the show, the battle in England, where he faced against his dwarfish opposite number, left him fused together with Culp, who could take control of his host on occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a way that Robinson actually explained how the character that he wrote in the 90s was actually different to the amoral one from the earlier years.
Gotcha.
So it was a retcon without retconning him.
Pretty much just adding an element that was never really explored before.
Yeah, and because I actually had never heard of Colt before that, and I don't think if anyone's heard of him since, it would be good to know.
Well, he's not good enough to get a Wikipedia entry, so. Now, he sought help from Dr. Fate against Culp also, so I guess it's interesting how a guy could go against the JSA as often as the Shade did and, you know, turn to them for help as often as he did as well.
Yeah, that's what makes him, you know, such an interesting character to me. Is he sometimes he's actually not even, he's more like a anti-hero, would you say?
I'd say so. From the times that I've seen him, you know, he can sort of remind me of somebody like, say, like the Punisher minus the guns, if that makes any sense. You know, a guy who's sort of like on the line of the law and obviously goes to the negative side as often as he goes to the positive side, but he can do both just basically to suit his needs.
Yeah. So, and he does it quite well.
Yes, he does. All in black, too.
If anyone's ever seen me, you'll notice that I'm always wearing black, even to work. I actually can work where you can wear black shirts instead of or white shirts. So I've got black shirts with Superman ties that I wear to work.
See, now I just have this image in my head of you dressed like the Shade.
I just need the top hat, and I'll be right. And I've got a little bit more hair than he does.
Oh, well. Yeah, it could easily be dealt with.
No, it can't. It's assault with a deadly weapon. I've had it for 15 years. Actually, it's longer. It's like 19 years.
Wow.
The Shade also introduced himself to Jack Knight, who, when he took over as Starman, and made himself sort of be known to be an aid to him by having a pivotal role in rescuing his father, yes, who'd captured Ted, so... Even though his behaviour was still under scrutiny, anything to do in Opal City, he never caused a problem again.
Ted Knight, at the time, by the way, I don't know because I've only read the last volume. Was he in his complete right mind at that point? Because I know he had some mental problems in the past.
It's from what I remember, he did.
Okay.
Going into the way sort of Ted and Jack and everything came about, there was also David, who was his older brother.
Yeah.
And most people would know that in the first, I think it's the first two pages of the first issue of the 90 series for Starman, you actually see David as Starman and getting shot and killed.
Yeah.
So I don't think he really got over that, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But he still seemed to be, well, from what I remember, I haven't read it for a number of years, but he still seemed to actually be in his right mind at that point.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, I'm only talking about that because I've read, you know, stories in the past when I talked about in his earlier days where he had some mental issues. But again, that could have been introduced later on or, you know, just not really affected him at this time in his life. Maybe that was just earlier on.
Well, he would have been he was a DC scientist, so how many DC scientists aren't mad?
True. Yeah. You're absolutely right about that. They've all got some sort of mental disorder going on.
Yeah, and towards the end of the series, actually, they tied up the Shade's history with a 13-part... Oh, can you pronounce that?
I believe
Grand Guignol story, allowing the Shade to rid himself of his arch-foe, and it left it open for him to be leaving his villainous ways behind. You know, from there, that was really... Basically, the Shade's gone into a semi-retirement role.
Okay.
He hasn't really been seen much of late. I really wish they would bring him back in some form, just because he's just such an interesting character.
I have a feeling we'll see him eventually in JLA. I'm only saying that because of the fact that Brad Meltzer seems to have an appreciation of the character, as obviously he used him in the Green Arrow series when Meltzer was on it. So it's certainly possible we might see him somewhere down the line in Justice League of America.
I was thinking it could be in JSA as well.
It could be. It could certainly be.
Because it would fit in with the old Jay Garrick and everything as well.
There
could be a link there.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. Yeah. I'm only thinking that that it might be JLA because obviously who's in Justice League of America right now but a Starman. So not the same Starman, but a Starman that appeared in the actual Starman series for a while as a character and is now a member of the Justice League of America. So you never know about Shade.
Yep, and, well, from what I've got here, sort of one of the last appearances of the Shade was in JSA number 81.
There you go.
and he apparently became Opal City's reluctant hero in the absence of both Elongated Man and Black Condor. Yep. So
that was after the events of Identity Crisis, by the way. So that sort of explains why Elongated Man is not there, and obviously 52 would explain why he's not there as well. And Black Condor, yeah, bad stuff happened to Black yeah. Condor.
I don't know much about Black Condor, to be honest. Well, I keep looking at the bad guys.
Black Condor, spoilers here, just to warn you guys, spoilers for Infinite Crisis number one. Actually, Black Condor was a member of the Freedom Fighters, run by Uncle Sam, and most of the Freedom Fighters ended up dying in Infinite Crisis number one, and I believe this Black Condor was one of the ones who died. There is now a new Black Condor in the Freedom Fighters that are happening now in Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, the miniseries, but I'm almost positive it's not the same guy. He might be related to him in some way, but I'm almost positive it's not the same guy that it used to be.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the only introduction I really had to the Freedom Fighters was through, was it Battle for Bloodhaven?
Yeah.
And that was where I left it.
Although, trust me when I say this, Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, so much better than Battle for Bloodhaven. So much better. Okay. So, the art especially.
Okay.
Because you've got wonderful, I believe that's actually, Daniel Acuna. Daniel Acuna is doing that, and he, actually, I have a sketch of his from last year's New York Comic Con. It was absolutely amazing, and he did plenty of stuff for DC in the past, and he does a great job on that book, so definitely worth picking up, maybe in trade or something like that once it comes out.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff now I'm looking at for trades for stuff I didn't jump on straight away. So.
Yeah.
And then they're all starting to come out now. It's really annoying.
Yeah. The Black Condor that was the Black Condor who died, his name was Ryan Kendall. And the current Black Condor's name is John Trujillo. I believe that's how you pronounce it. So it looks like there's no actual relationship between the two of them. So that's the one who died. That's why Opal City is defenderless, because, again, Elongated Man's off doing his stuff, and Black Condor is, well, dead as a doornail. So there you go.
And lastly, the first Starman annual showed the Shade was still alive unaccountable thousands of years in the future, where he's the protector of a utopian planet. So, yeah, he's, you know, he's not going anywhere.
But,
well, so for, by the looks into space.
Yeah, but again, we got to remember that DC every now and then likes to retcon. Yeah. So it's certainly possible that there might come a time where something does happen to the Shade. I mean, just think of what happened with the Vandal Savage in the past couple of years, you know, and how different that character has become. So, you know, something might happen down the line where they say, yeah, you know, that story, well, Infinite Crisis wiped that out. That didn't actually happen. But I hope that he continues to be around, because I honestly like the character. I want to see him here years and years in the future.
Yeah. Hey, that's what they should bring him back in. Legion.
There you go. Oh, that would be great, actually.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God. Hey, Mark Waid loves writing anybody. So,
yeah,
so
you and he knows him, them all,
yeah,
so.
Exactly. Oh, my God, that would be so awesome. Yeah, like that.
Is he on my MySpace? Okay.
Because I'm thinking to myself right now, and not even as a villain, you know, as sort of like a mentor, perhaps, for one of the, for one of them, maybe, like Shadowless.
Yeah.
Could have Shade as a mentor.
Yeah, so there we go. We've got umpteen possibilities for him down the track.
Definitely.
And in other media, he actually, as most of you would remember, or those who watched JL and JLU, he appeared in the Injustice gang with Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be more of the Shade that would have been possessed by a cult.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as I said, I've got the figure sitting right here. So, you know, I loved him in that one. It's the only figure that I haven't given to my son.
Yeah.
he's got a box full of them otherwise.
It's kind of a shame, actually, that JLU ended when it did. Because I have a feeling they probably would have done more with the Shade character had they been given the time to do so. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong here. I would have totally loved to see JLU continue for two reasons. Number one, a year later. Literally, one more year, and they would have been able to do a Justice League International story with Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
Because the rights for Blue Beetle were tied up until the year after JLU got canceled. And they really wanted to do a story with Blue Beetle, so that's one reason. And another reason would be Jack Knight Starman. They could have so easily done something with Jack Knight Starman, either against Shade or with Shade, and have, you know, sort of a culmination of the character where you see his many different layers, as opposed to just, you know, a member of the Injustice Gang like he was in the one episode he was in. But, you know, what are you going to do, really? I mean, what happened. So, hey, who knows? He could end up in Legion, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, that would be good. I actually haven't seen the Legion one. It hasn't came out down here, and
I haven't seen it either.
I haven't pointed BitTorrent that way yet. but I don't know. DC seems to is it? I don't think it's DC. I think it's actually coming down to Fox actually just wanting to move on to the next thing. It's not up to DC actually wanting to push for another season.
You mean Warner Brothers?
Well, Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Because have you watched the Teen Titans one?
You know, I watched a couple of episodes. I tried to get into it. I really did, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. For all I know, if I watch it all the way through, I might like it. But from the few episodes I saw, it was kind
of
eh.
The first season was like the first season of Justice League. You know, okay. It took a while just for them to get into character.
Yeah.
But you go in. I just recently read the Teen Titans. What is it? Titans Around the World?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it had the Doom Patrol and everything.
Uh-huh.
Do you know that the actual Teen Titans cartoon actually did that story first?
Really?
Yeah, and it was four-part one. With it didn't go into the whole relationship between the monkey and the brain. I can't remember his name. Was it Mordark or something like that?
You would know better than I, so.
Yeah, it didn't go into the fact that they had a relationship together.
Okay.
But it was basically they were trying to stop the Teen Titans.
Okay.
Instead, in the episode, instead of trying to stop the Doom Patrol. And I recently finished reading that, and I just finished watching the episodes again, because they play it here each weeknight.
Okay.
And it was just, the stories, as they built up, they got so in-depth with it.
Uh-huh.
And as we said with the first episode, you have Mr. Hellboy himself, Ron Perlman, actually doing the voice of Slade through it.
Yeah.
And they actually did the whole... Not Terra Incognito, what was it?
Terra. The whole Terra story with...
the Judas Contract.
Yeah, the Judas Contract, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first time they did the Judas Contract too, so...
And now it's done in George Perez style,
hopefully,
which is going to be absolutely outstanding, so...
Yeah, but they had so many good stories. Like, once you got into it, now I've got my son sort of hooked on that, and he has to watch it every night.
Uh-huh.
and then he complains when it finishes. Yeah. So I've got him started off well, but... It seems that in each show that they've done, it's been done just to sort of run on to the next thing soon afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And that was a bit of a tangent for us to go on.
here's something interesting about, you know, to bring it back to The Shade and JLU. Do you know who voiced him?
It was...
Stephen McHady Smith.
Stephen McHady.
Yeah, Stephen McHady Smith, who was actually in a Deep Space Nine episode.
Ah, okay. I was trying to pick where he was from, so...
And he also played Dr. Reston in the Seinfeld episode, The Wallet.
I don't remember that one off the top of my head.
Elaine Bennis's psychiatrist boyfriend.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. So, yep. You know, he's got a small little career, you know, not anything that big, but he's been on Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, The X-Files... And let's see, anything else that's actually noticeable here? Oh, here we go. Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, God.
But in all seriousness,
I stopped
though,
at the second one.
Yeah. All seriousness, though, it was a really good job on the voice. He embodied it very well, and I felt they did a really good job with that. So, I mean, it felt like the character. And another interesting tidbit about the character of the Shade in the comics, the Charles Dickens connection.
Yep.
That was totally awesome. The fact that that Robinson, and again, thank you Wikipedia for actually supplying this information for me here, that Robinson borrowed from Charles Dickens the old curiosity shop for Shade and explained it that Shade's life inspired Dickens.
Mm.
That is just so brilliant. What a twist right there.
And just also going on with that, he drew on actor Jonathan Pryce for inspiration in fleshing out the voice of the Shade, too, the way he spoke.
So, I mean, there's a lot of layers in this character and a lot of depth that was put in there. I mean, he's matured and changed so much from that first appearance in Flash Comics 33. So, yeah. I mean, it's a completely different character.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, if you can find the miniseries, have you got it yourself?
I don't, but I've always wanted it.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So I might want to actually track it down on eBay. So, If I'm able to get it, I'll let you know.
If you're looking for it and you see it on eBay, leave the first one you see for Ian, and then go for the second one.
Actually, if I can't find it there, Baltimore Comic Con has some of the best dollar bins I've ever seen. So hopefully I'll be able to get it at Baltimore Comic Con once that comes around this year. So, and it'll be at San Diego. So, again, like I said, I'll try it at both places and find which one I can get it. So,
okay. Well, hopefully you'll get to have a read of it soon and
here's hoping.
Get to see what I'm talking about. Exactly. You have to read that series.
I know
that Chris said it on Collected Comics Library a little while ago as well.
Yeah.
He said you have to see that when he did his Starman review.
Yeah. Well, again, I've read the last volume of Starman. And the last volume, that, you know, where everything wraps up, it's amazing how the story itself feels so self-contained in that last volume. Like it didn't matter to me that I'd read any other volume. When I read that last volume, I knew exactly what was going on, and I had no idea, you know, like who anybody was. But they explained it so easily in the text itself, where you could just pick up that volume and know exactly what was going on. That's what I love about a series.
Yeah. And I think that's what everybody was saying about that series. You know, I wish it never had ended, to be honest.
You know what? It was the 90s Manhunter to me.
Mm.
It was the 90s version of Manhunter. So that's sort of the way that I'll put that there. The fact that you could pick up any issue and sort of know what's going on without much, what the hell is this, what the hell is that, who the hell is that. Just read it and enjoy it. That's the best way to put it.
And that's about it for us.
I'd say so.
Yeah. A quick one for us this time.
Yeah. Not too shabby. So, but, well, you know, this is a good thing because we'll hopefully be doing these things more often. Hopefully. So, again, the next one that we're going to be doing, you want to announce that now or?
Yeah, we'll announce it now. The next one, a few people were asking for it, so we're going to have a look at Bullseye. So
excellent.
That one should probably go for a bit longer.
Oh, yeah. Because Bullseye has many a different layer and many a different time in his life that you were just screaming at him like, how the hell did you do that?
And also, if you don't want us to mention Colin Farrell, post it in the forum.
Oh, hey, one of my favorite moments in that movie, okay, and people are going to, like, roll their eyes when I say this, but one of my favorite moments in the movie, when they're having their big chase through Manhattan, I know exactly where they are when they are. Okay, because at one point, I see in the background a restaurant I've been to a couple times called Rue 57. And I know exactly where that is in Manhattan. So when I saw that, that was my favorite part of the movie.
My favorite part with Bullseye was the fact that he turned around and said, and I want a costume.
Yeah. And then, of course, what does comics do? Oh, yeah, we really like that look. Costume schmoshtume. You have a like bullet on your head now. Oh boy, I'm so glad that they eventually went back to the costume because that's such a better look for him.
And you see why I read a lot more DC and independent, but I'm not going to go there.
But anyway, let's go here. What's upcoming for Cryptographic that you want to let us know?
Cryptographic. Hopefully by the time that this is out, we'll have episode 7 up. I know Lobo's working on it at the moment. I actually just got an email saying that he was working on it at the moment.
Awesome.
And next week's going to be our first episode of our Director's Cuts, which is a new concept for us, which I'll have to say Lobo came up with, and I went, great, let's jump on board of that. What it's going to be is we've got Kat and Josh from the Utopiates. We have a little interview with them just to let people know about the book who haven't seen the book. And then we're doing literally a director's cut like you would get of a movie of the first issue of the comic.
Oh, that's really cool.
So we're going page by page and all the little stories that they came up with and, you know, what they were going for and hidden things that they had there and what happened on the original cut of the book and you name it.
And like Sean and Jim, it'll be a 3-hour episode, so it's all good.
No, it should be about, at the most, it should be about an hour and a half. We're trying to keep ours down to about an hour normally, but this one was about an hour and a half.
That makes me smile right there. that means I can definitely get that one in. So you want to give the website for everybody?
Yeah, it's www.lordshaper.com/cryptographic, and that's crypto as in the dog and graphic with a K on the end.
Yes, indeed. And definitely give it a listen. It's great stuff. You get some great news in there and some great insight. And it was nice meeting Lobo for the short time I was able to meet him at New York Comic Con. And hopefully next year I'll get to meet you, Damien. So
Oh, I'm hoping for it, so I'm just waiting to get permission from the other half. And just think, in my role as a salesman at work, I always turn around and say to people, it's easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission, and I can't get it myself.
Go figure, man. Go figure. I think we all sort of know what you're talking about there, but always a pleasure, buddy, and thanks for joining in for this one, and obviously, hopefully in the next month or so, maybe even earlier than that, we'll have the next Rogues Galley for everybody.
Yeah, I want to get back into it because it's just so much fun when we do it.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it, man. And yeah, without a doubt, definitely good. And also, a reminder for everybody out there, this isn't the only Comic Time you'll be hearing in the future. Tomorrow, I'm going to be recording probably with Raph and Brent and myself and possibly Juan. He's having some computer trouble, so we're not quite sure if we're going to be able to get Juan on the show, but we're going to review 300 Spartans! So that should be a really awesome episode, and we got to see an IMAX, so we get to have the IMAX experience versus the non-IMAX experience. So,
oh, and if you want to hear about IMAX experiences, wait till episode 7's up of Cryptographic and listen to what Brian has to say about them.
Ooh.
Just for his local one. Okay. You'll hear this, it'll be good.
Well, I'm going to give away a little spoiler on something that I'll be talking about on the show. Okay, here's the thing about IMAXs, and again, just very short here, the fact that when there's a film blemish, there's a film blemish. Oh, my God. All right? The usual speck of dirt that you'd see in the film is about 8 times magnified. So,
okay.
So you're – because, again, this is not digital yet. So when you're looking at it, all of the film blemishes are so much more apparent and it's so much more of an eyesore than they would be on a regular screen. So I'll be talking about that in depth next episode, but that's one of my major pet peeves about IMAXs. So there you go. Just some information there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Just think about how annoying it is when you see those little film specs. Imagine them 10 times bigger.
Yeah, and in 3D and coming right at you.
Only if you're Superman, but yeah. Anyway, right. Let's give the email address for everybody. Where can they contact you, Mr. Shaper?
They can get me at thelordshaper@gmail.com.
All right.
Seems like a good one to give this time.
Without a doubt. So you can find him over there. And the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums. Both Cryptographic and Comic Timing's forums are located at the Comic Geek Speak forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. And I thank the Comic Geek Speak guys for hosting us there. We are proud members.
Same with us.
Yes, exactly. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please review us on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And please vote for us on Dig and Podcast Alley. There's a link both to Cryptographic and Comic Timing on the Comic Timing forums and a whole bunch of other podcasts as well to check on out. So go ahead and do that there. I just added a couple more to the Dig list. I just added, I believe, Wednesday's Hall is on there now, and a Comic Pants, and a couple other ones. So go ahead and check that out. And Geeks United is listed on there as well now. So once again, always a pleasure, Damien, and glad to hear your voice all the way from Australia to my ears.
Yeah, and we forgot to give the warning for Equinox's wife.
Oh, warning Equinox. I guess he sort of figured it out, but
yeah. Run! So in other words, he's going to find that the bag's packed and the plane has been booked.
Exactly. Oh, jeez. And since it's 2:07 p.m. where you are, enjoy your afternoon, buddy. It's 11:38 p.m. at my place, and I still got one more thing to record tonight. So as always, there's always time for comics.
See you later. Yeah, I've just got to remember how we do go about this.
it'll come naturally, man. You got to
remember, I wrote my notes up for this like 3 months ago.
Well, I know. And you got to remember that again. It's mostly your shtick here. I'll just be coming in with the comments like usual. So
yeah, Marvel, all I've been getting is Daredevil,
good.
Moon Knight.
Good, you're better off.
I've picked up Ghost Rider. I'm struggling with Blade. Actually, Blade 6 is not too bad.
I'm just kind of glad that Moon Knight left his house.
Yes.
Took him long enough, but eventually he was like, you know what, it's about damn time I leave my apartment. I'm like, great, 6 issues in, he left his apartment. Congratulations. Thought it was going to be about Shut-In. That's his new superhero.
he was gonna kidnap a Doombot. He was gonna dress it up like himself and send it out. And he was gonna sit there with a PlayStation controller.
And then eventually the Doombot gets defeated by Squirrel Girl.
I want another Underworld movie that just has Kate Beckinsale just standing there in a costume.
You mean like every other movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She can either have the Van Helsing one or the Underworld one.
Isn't it great?
I don't mind.
Isn't it great how the second movie went from being the focus of the Michael character to the focus of her character, and like Michael had like 5 minutes screen time?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. He was the focal point. He was the character. And Kate Beckinsale marries a director, and all of a sudden she's a star.
Exactly. I'm amazed people went to see it after it was announced that she married the director. I know, I was disappointed.
And to think, the director had to sit there while they had their sex scene, you know?
I wonder if he played stunt double.
I'm sure he probably did.